Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Yeah! Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, and what a difference 2.5 months can make. Vice President Kamala Harris made minced meat out of Dear Leader Trump, and she did it by both prosecuting the case against Dear Leader's lack of character, criminality, and creator of chaos, but also by presenting herself as a president and also as a regular person during their debate this week. More on the presidential debate here in just a moment. It's also a solo Left of Lansing this week because I have some things I really want to voice myself about the debate and many election items here in Michigan. And in my last call, I have to share the news of how the state's investments in clean energy are already paying off in terms of diversifying the state's energy portfolio and in the number of good paying jobs, something that we progressives knew would always happen if it could happen. So that's coming up in my last call. I do want to mention, though, that next week, Dr. Joshua Cowan from Michigan State University will join me to discuss his new book called The Privateers: How Billionaires Created a Culture War and Sold School Vouchers. Now, Dr. Cowan was on the show last year to talk about the Christian nationalist movement to force taxpayers to shell out money to private and religious schools, which takes away funding from public schools. And as we in Michigan well know, Betsy DeVos and her family have tried for years and failed for years to convince Michiganders to back their crooked voucher plans. And even though they've failed at times, they found new ways to funnel money away from public schools to private schools. And in his book, Dr. Cowan highlights the right-wing Christian nationalist forces who've been busy enacting voucher schemes across the country, even though vouchers continue to be and will always be extremely unpopular with the voters. And even worse, the money goes to schools that preach extreme MAGA right-wing so-called values. So Dr. Joshua Cowan will join the show next week, and you won't want to miss that one. Now, before I forget, I visited the Gratiot County Democratic Party headquarters this week and picked up my Kamala Harris, Tim Walz yard sign, which is standing very proudly in front of the house right now. And I also picked up my Kira Harris Bolden and Kimberly Thomas for the Michigan Supreme Court sign out front as well. Please remember, the Supreme Court races here in Michigan just as important as any other race. And I also picked up my Tim Odekirk for the 92nd Michigan House District sign as he tries to unseat one of the worst state reps in the state of Michigan, that being Jerry Nyer, my state representative. But I do have to mention this, and it is a little disappointing news. When I was picking up my signs, I asked the volunteers at the Gratiot County Democratic Party headquarters if there were any Alyssa Slotkin signs, because of course, Alyssa Slotkin is taking on Florida Mike Rogers for the U.S. Senate seat here in Michigan. But guess what? They said there were no signs. And I was sort of dumbfounded by that. And a few seconds later, a couple of other people walked into the building requesting a Harris Wall sign and then asking for a Slotkin sign. And when the volunteers told them that they didn't have any signs, some of the people there just seemed extremely disappointed as me. And one of them said, you know, winning that Senate seat is just as vital as winning the presidency. Yeah, and I agreed. And so did the volunteers. And the volunteers asked all of us to contact Slotkin's people to tell them, hey, send some signs up here to Gratiot County. So for those of you listening out there, help us in telling Alyssa Slotkin's campaign to send some signs across the state. In fact, as many signs as possible to different county Democratic headquarters throughout the state as possible. I mean, this is key. We don't want Florida Mike Rogers representing the state in the U.S. Senate. No. And while polls are showing that Slotkin is winning thus far, you can't take anything for granted. I mean, don't forget in 2000, don't forget how Gary Peters earned a nail-biter of a victory over John James. Okay, so we cannot take anything for granted. We need to win as many votes as possible, all right? So one of the reasons that I spent so much time this year interviewing Democrats running for state house seats and congressional seats currently occupied by MAGA Republicans is because not only do I want to help spread the message of sane, strong, progressive Democrats running to defeat MAGA in these districts, many of them in rural districts, but I want to try to make a dent in the MAGA advantage in these districts. So please, I beg the Slotkin campaign to please do more to gain as much exposure as possible across the entire state of Michigan. There are so many voters and volunteers who just want to push your campaign and push your message because keeping the U.S. Senate blue is key, especially if we have a Harris presidency. So come on, Slotkin campaign people, let's get on the ball. Which reminds me to remind you to please donate to your county Democratic Party. I mean, these people do good work. They give their own time to fight for the common good, all right? So don't forget to donate to your county Democratic Party. All right, now speaking of fighting for the common good and speaking of Kamala Harris, what a debate night, right?
And I'll tell you something. He's going to talk about immigration a lot tonight, even when it's not the subject that is being raised. And I'm going to actually do something really unusual, and I'm going to invite you to attend one of Donald Trump's rallies, because it's a really interesting thing to watch. You will see during the course of his rallies, he talks about fictional characters like Hannibal Lecter. He will talk about windmills cause cancer. And what you will also notice is that people start leaving his rallies early out of exhaustion and boredom. And I will tell you, the one thing you will not hear him talk about is you. You will not hear him talk about your needs, your dreams, and your desires. And I'll tell you, I believe you deserve a president who actually puts you first. And I pledge to you that I will.
Vice President Harris, thank you. President Trump, on that point, I want to get your response.
Well, I would like to respond.
Let me just ask, though, why did you try to kill that bill, and successfully so? That would have put thousands of additional agents and officers on the border.
First, let me respond as to the rallies. She said people start leaving. People don't go to her rallies. There's no reason to go. And the people that do go, she's busing them in and paying them to be there and then showing them in a different light. So she can't talk about that. People don't leave my rallies.
I have the biggest rallies, the most glorious of rallies. Now look, Kamala Harris, I have to tell you, had some unfair and what I felt were some unreachable expectations to meet in this debate. I mean, this week's Monday Musing had me expressing how the corporate media made it near impossible for Kamala Harris to earn a debate victory against dear leader Trump. There were so many demands being pushed on her, while the same demands weren't being pushed on dear leader at all. I just didn't think that she'd be able to meet these expectations. And if she even fell a little short in the eyes of the corporate media, she'd be declared a loser at the debate. But man, did she not only rise to the challenge of the moment, but she far surpassed them and thoroughly did something that very few others could say they ever did during Trump's political career. And that is thoroughly dismantling dear leader for the feckless, mindless bully he is and has always been. In fact, NBC News reports that an estimated 67.1 million viewers watched the debate, according to Nielsen. The estimated viewership improved on the ratings for the matchup between Trump and President Biden back in June, which attracted roughly 51.3 million viewers. Nielsen said more than 6.4 million viewers were ages 18 to 34. Another 16.8 million were 35 to 54, but viewers over 55 made up the largest share, with more than 41.3 million tuning in. Tuesday's ratings fell short of the record set back in 2016 when roughly 84 million people watched Trump square off against former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Now, this data also did not include the number of people who followed the debate via social media, news websites, or streaming platforms. So that number is only going to get higher. It was a beautiful opportunity for Kamala Harris to make a mark in political history, just not in this race, but political history. And she did so, and then some. The clip I just played was the second part of an answer that Kamala Harris gave on immigration. After detailing for the American people how Trump blew up the bipartisan immigration deal, a deal that basically gave everything MAGA Republicans could ever dream of, she then pivoted to talk about the lackluster crowds attending his rallies. Now, immigration is one of the few, if not the only, issue that Dear Leader is polling much better than Harris on in this election. And in a masterful stroke, Harris chose that question to be the moment to knock him off his game and to bring up how bored his crowds appear to be at his rallies. Now, I'm not sure she thought the gamble would work, but when it did, you could tell by Harris's facial reactions and her expressions that even she couldn't believe the gamble did work and that Dear Leader just couldn't let it lie. So he spent some of his time talking about crowd sizes, falling right into her trap that he just could not resist. And it wasn't just that part where he took the bait. Harris knew that Dear Leader would bring up the right-wing lie that Haitian immigrants were eating other people's pets in Springfield, Ohio. Now, here's how Kamala Harris knew that he would take the bait, because it was something that was being shared in the right-wing nutosphere, and that's how Harris knew that Dear Leader would rant and rave about it, because it was making the rounds in right-wing media. Now, for those of us who are in sanity land, maybe, you know, there's some of you who didn't know much about this whole thing and you didn't know exactly what Trump was talking about, and you really didn't know about this lie that Haitians in Springfield, Ohio were killing and eating pets. Well, the lie stemmed from a story where a woman in Canton, Ohio was accused of killing and eating a cat. Now, Canton is about 170 miles away from Springfield, Ohio, and the woman who got arrested was not an immigrant and has lived in Ohio for 18 years. But that didn't stop Trump nor his boy wonder tech bro J.B. Vance from spreading a lie that Haitian immigrants were kidnapping other people's pets and eating them. It's a racist lie, a pure racist lie they knew would stir up parts of the base voters, since Springfield, Ohio has seen an influx of Haitian immigrants of late. CBS News reports that there's an estimated 12,000 to 15,000 migrants in Ohio's Clark County, with more than 10,000 coming in from Haiti, according to local officials. The Springfield-based Haitian Community Help and Support Center was established in 2023 to help assist migrants, especially Haitians arriving in Clark County. Now, these migrants from Haiti have work permits and have temporary work status, so they are here legally to work. And Ohio Republican Governor Mike DeWine told CBS News that these Haitians came here to work because there were jobs and they filled a lot of jobs. And if you talk to employers, they've done a very, very good job and they work very, very hard. That was Republican Governor Mike DeWine telling CBS News that Haitian migrant workers are doing a very, very good job and that they work very, very hard. Now, there was some tragedy recently when a Haitian immigrant driving a school bus accidentally killed an 11-year-old boy named Aiden Clark. Again, MAGA World clamped on to this tragedy because they saw a big opportunity to use racism and bigotry to stir up their base, because that's how gullible they see their base being. But Nathan Clark, Aiden Clark's father, is none too pleased with MAGA and how it is using his son's tragic death for its political purposes. According to CBS News, Nathan Clark said using Aiden as a political tool is, to say the least, reprehensible. And that's what Clark said at a Springfield City Commission meeting this week. He also said, "My son Aiden Clark was not murdered. He was accidentally killed by an immigrant from Haiti. This tragedy has been felt all over this community, in the state, and even the nation. But don't spin this towards hate." But you see, that's all MAGA has. That's all Trump has. It's hate. So that's the backstory of this whole rant that Dear Leader went on when he shouted how cats and dogs were being killed and devoured by Haitians. And what I love most about that moment was, though, was Kamala Harris's reaction. I mean, you can even hear Dear Leader's mic pick up her sheer laughter in the background, laughter and disbelief, not in what he was saying, but that he actually did what she kind of planned for him to do. I mean, it reminds me of the scene in A Few Good Men when Tom Cruise is able to goad Jack Nicholson into admitting that he did indeed order the code red. And there's a moment where Cruise looks so stunned and speechless just for a moment that Nicholson fell into his trap and did exactly what he hoped Nicholson's character would do, but still he couldn't dream that Nicholson would do it. Well, Trump fell into the trap, just as Harris hoped he'd do. And he did not disappoint. It was the moment where she appeared to be the grown-up, the next president of the United States, while Grandpa was out there yelling and screaming at the ABC News moderators how he didn't care that Springfield city officials debunked the cats and dogs being devoured lie because, you know why? Because Grandpa said he watched it on TV. Oh, man. I mean, it's funny, but it's also sad at the same time because you're seeing a man losing all of his cognitive abilities in real time. But by the way, I have to say this. I'm loving how some MAGA media influencers and bloviators are complaining about the moderators. Ben Shapiro tweeted his anger towards ABC's David Muir and Lindsay Davis. And this is what Ben had to say. And I quote, ABC News put a stake through the heart of presidential debates tonight. Any Republican who acquiesces in his or her own forced euthanasia is a fool. Trump should absolutely not accept another debate unless the moderators are approved by both parties. Now, I had a little response to Little Ben as I tweeted, cry louder. ABC allowed Dear Leader over 4 extra minutes to talk over them and Harris last night. They wanted the Trump show. He wanted the Trump show. He got his wish and got annihilated. This is like blaming the refs for your team's 30-point loss. And it's true. The ABC moderators allowed Dear Leader to have his little Trump show as he bullied them to open up his mic whenever he wanted. You saw it. I saw it. That's why he spoke for nearly 5 extra minutes than Kamala Harris. And they also addressed him as President Trump, which I have to say really, really bugged me. I mean, they should have called him ex-President Trump or at the very least former president. I mean, because it gave this aura that he's president while she's just vice president. However, give the moderators credit for fact-checking 5 of Dear Leader's over 100 lies, I suppose. Now, I will be a little fair because that's who I am. The moderators, yes, could have forced Harris to answer their very first question if America was in a better place now than 4 years ago economically. Harris chose that moment to give her opening statement, which I think she expected she was going to have a chance to give and was a bit caught off guard at the very beginning that the moderators gave an economic question first rather than allowing her to give an opening statement. So she did not really answer that question, but she still used the moment to explain her story and some of her economic proposals. However, I still don't think it was a difficult question to answer. And in some ways, she did answer their question at different points during the debate. Harris explained how she and Joe Biden worked to clean up the mess caused by Trump's failed COVID response and how that led to a supply chain jam and led to inflation. But now, with inflation dropping to its lowest point since April 2021, low unemployment and rising wages, America is definitely on the rebound. Perfect? No, of course not. But it is on the rebound from where we were when Dear Leader left office. It's a really, really good argument for Harris to have. I really think that, and I wish that she could have presented it all at once. So maybe that's where the moderators could have challenged Harris at the beginning. But let's be honest, everyone. Come on. Dear Leader's lies occurred at a higher frequency, and yet the moderators only call him out on 5 of them. That's it. Now, that being said, the constant complaining from MAGA on the moderator just proves they knew their clown had a horrible, horrible, atrocious night. Then moments after the debate, Taylor Swift announced her support for Harris, and I knew that would throw MAGA into a tailspin. So much so, Boy Wonder tech bro J.B. Vance took to Fox News the next day, saying the following without really giving any thought to what it would sound like, apparently.
We admire Taylor Swift's music, but I don't think most Americans, whether they like her music or fans of hers or not, are going to be influenced by a billionaire celebrity who I think is fundamentally disconnected from the interests and the problems of most Americans.
Oh, man. I've always said that cognitive dissonance is always lacking with MAGA, and that can't be illustrated more starkly than by J.B. Vance complaining about the influence of a billionaire celebrity in politics while his boss is supposedly, quote-unquote, a billionaire. Bottom line, it was a near-perfect night for Kamala Harris, who won both on optics and on substance. She remained on offense throughout the entire night and took the battle to him. She followed Bobby Kennedy's advice. No, not RFK Jr. She followed his father's advice when Bobby told Jack Kennedy to kick Nixon in the balls as JFK walked on the stage for his debate against Richard Nixon. But I think the most poignant part of the whole debate and where she won it was when Harris tore into Dear Leader after his stunning defense of gutting Roe v. Wade, especially when he said appointing Supreme Court justices to erase Roe was exactly what everyone wanted. Harris responded, as feminist writer Jessica Valenti described, as reclaiming family values on abortion rights. It was a great argument. Listen.
Let's understand how we got here. Donald Trump hand-selected three members of the United States Supreme Court with the intention that they would undo the protections of Roe v. Wade. And they did exactly as he intended. And now in over 20 states, there are Trump abortion bans, which make it criminal for a doctor or nurse to provide health care. In one state, it provides prison for life. Trump abortion bans that make no exception even for rape and incest, which understand what that means. A survivor of a crime, a violation to their body, does not have the right to make a decision about what happens to their body next. That is immoral. And one does not have to abandon their faith or deeply held beliefs to agree. The government, and Donald Trump certainly, should not be telling a woman what to do with her body. I have talked with women around our country. You want to talk about this is what people wanted? Pregnant women who want to carry a pregnancy to term, suffering from a miscarriage, being denied care in an emergency room because the healthcare providers are afraid they might go to jail, and she's bleeding out in a car in the parking lot. She didn't want that. Her husband didn't want that. A 12 or 13-year-old survivor of incest being forced to carry a pregnancy to term. They don't want that. And I pledge to you, when Congress passes a bill to put back in place the protections of Roe v. Wade, as President of the United States, I will proudly sign it into law. But understand, if Donald Trump were to be reelected, he will sign a national abortion ban. Understand, in his Project 2025, there would be a national abortion, a monitor that would be monitoring your pregnancies, your miscarriages. I think the American people believe that certain freedoms, in particular, the freedom to make decisions about one's own body, should not be made by the government.
For me, that was the wow moment of the entire debate. I mean, that's where Harris had her best moment by far. And she put him so much on the defense that he spent most of his time then blaming Harris for not fixing student debt, which again, his Supreme Court blocked from happening. But that was the moment where Dear Leader Trump lost the debate, which is why he was flailing throughout the rest of the night. And she did what Joe Biden could not do: make Trump look old, decrepit, corrupt, and weak. What a difference 2.5 months can really make. You're listening to LOL.
It's progressivism with passion. It's the Left of Lansing podcast, where Pat shines a light on Michigan's progressive movement. Contact Pat at leftoflansing@gmail.com.
This is Left of Lansing, where it may sometimes sound like that we've got a concept of a plan for each and every episode, but in all sincerity, we just kind of wing it at times, you know, like Trump. You know, I forgot to bring this up in the last segment, but I did love how Kamala Harris caused frustration, so much frustration and angst amongst the DC cocktail circuit media elites for failing to provide policy papers. How could she not provide policy papers for them while at the same time, Dear Leader never did such a thing, nor were any demands, similar demands for such things, voiced by the corporate press? Did they ever demand that Trump release policy papers for them in 2016 and 2020 and this election? No. And yet, when talking about healthcare at the debate and his ultimate desire to destroy Obamacare once and for all. When asked at the debate, you know, what he would do, what was his plan to replace Obamacare, Trump said,
I have concepts of a plan. I'm not president right now.
What devastation. What devastation. He not only showed his ass to the entire country at that moment, but he also did the same to the corporate press that realized how it never once demanded policy papers on his healthcare plans, his extreme and disastrous tariff plans, or his plans to end the wars in Ukraine and Gaza, and on and on and on. The demands of Kamala Harris to provide detailed policies are over from here on out. They are over. The press can never say one thing about policy papers from Kamala Harris ever again. You know, I will say, though, I do hope I'm alive for the day when presidential candidates will argue how they can help strengthen Medicare for All at a debate someday. I really do. Instead of always saying we just want to strengthen private insurance, I just would love to hear them say, no, here's how we're going to strengthen Medicare for All. I do hope I'm alive for that day. Oh, and lastly on the subject, I don't mind Harris's term of an opportunity economy. Look, I've heard some fellow progressives like Sam Stein and Emma Vigeland on the Majority Report decry the usage of that term, although they do understand, they've said this, they understand why such a term works with some voters. I've mentioned this before here on the show, but I really enjoyed 4 of the 5 seasons of the British show called Poldark, which aired on PBS a few years ago. And the lead character, Ross Poldark, hence the name of the show, was always fighting for the working class, even though at times he may not have realized it or believed that he was really doing it. But when he was being recruited to run for Parliament, one of the big money donors who wants to back him is asking questions. And one of the questions that he asks Ross Poldark is if he believes in equality. And Ross responds, I'm for equal opportunity. And that line always kind of resonated with me. And that's the lane that Kamala Harris is currently on. It signals that she wants to strengthen the safety net and help give a leg up to people so that way they can make it in our society. But it's still in the end, is up to the people to make what they will to live in our society. And I think that's kind of what we've always wanted as progressives here in America. I mean, you know, that's how I see it. Tell me what you think. You can reach out to me at leftoflansing@gmail.com, and that's where we can always continue to talk about anything that I bring up here on the podcast. And you can follow me on Twitter, the Facebook, and the Gram. And don't forget to subscribe to my YouTube page. Just look up Left of Lansing. You know, I got some reaction on YouTube from the Jill Stein supporters who apparently did not appreciate my Monday musing on how I said AOC hit the nail on the head when she called out Jill Stein for never, ever lifting a finger to help the Green Party grow on a local and state level, and how she's nothing but a political predator who pops up every 4 years to hurt the progressive movement, just as she's trying to do once again today. Now, many of the responses I got on YouTube said, I must support the genocide happening in Gaza, which is absolutely ludicrous if they even listen to the show. But it does show that AOC not only hit a nerve, but that she was indeed correct. Because not one of the responses that I received from that post tried to deal with AOC's or my criticisms that Jill Stein doesn't want to grow a movement. She only wants to grow her brand. So subscribe to the show on YouTube as well, please. Time now for the Left of Lansing last call. As dear leader Donald Trump keeps sounding like a freaking lunatic by claiming wind turbines cause cancer and that with the climate setting record high temperatures each and every year, now's the time to keep doubling down on fossil fuels. Oh, man. In Michigan, thanks to progressive leaders and legislation, the state's moving towards building a greener economy. And you know what? It's paying dividends. Kyle Davidson from Michigan Advance released a story titled Clean Energy Jobs and Funding Fuel Michigan Jobs and Economic Growth, a new study says. So let me read just a few first paragraphs here, if you don't mind. Kyle Davidson writes, more than a year after Five Lakes Energy released a report detailing more than $7.8 billion in federal investments available to fuel Michigan's transition to clean energy, The consulting firm is taking stock of the state's energy economy following the passage of multiple laws based on Governor Gretchen Whitmer's climate plan. In November, the Democratic-led Michigan legislature voted through a host of policies, including goals for transitioning the state to 100% clean energy by the year 2040 and increasing the state's energy waste reduction standards and efforts intended to streamline the permitting process by allowing the Michigan Public Service Commission to approve large-scale renewable energy projects provided that they meet state requirements. And then Kyle Davidson later writes, by examining the interactions between the Inflation Reduction Act and Michigan's suite of clean energy legislation, the report estimates that Michigan families will save an average of $297 a year on their energy bill by 2030 and $713 a year by the year 2040 compared to if these policies were never enacted, saving Michiganders more than was predicted in the previous report. Wow. Additionally, Michigan will bring in $15.6 billion in investments from the Inflation Reduction Act by the year 2030 and $30.7 billion by the year 2040. The state will also shrink its greenhouse gas emissions by at least 65% over the next 6 years, down 88% by the year 2040. Michigan is also projected to save $7.3 billion by 2030 in avoided public health costs such as deaths, hospitalizations, and lost school and work days, with savings across the state totaling $27.8 billion by the year 2040. Oh, and when it comes to jobs, in the survey, 75% of companies indicated that they were hiring or understaffed, with 90% indicating they would need to hire or they would be understaffed in the next 3 years. So guess what, everyone? You know who made that possible? Democrats, both on the federal level and right here on the state level. These moves not only help combat climate change and help save our state's environment, but they also help diversify our state's economic portfolio. They open up the possibility of thousands of new and innovative jobs in an industry that's not only growing, but that is also a necessity. And this is where the marketplace is going, everyone. The marketplace is heading this way. And rather than just sit back and remain stuck in the 20th century economy, Democrats are helping push us into the future. And remember, had Michigan Republicans been in charge of Lansing, they would have done what they did the previous 40 years when they had some kind of hold on the state's government. Nothing.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
That's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Please make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Subscriptions are important to we podcasters, so please subscribe and give it a good 5-star review if you don't mind as well. And next week, I will talk about the school voucher scheme with Dr. Joshua Cowan, who's got a new book out called The Privateers. I can't wait to talk to him next week. And let me say, I've been paying so much attention to the start of the football season that I have failed to really talk much about our Detroit Tigers, who find themselves in the middle of a wild card playoff race. Playoffs? The Tigers are showing everyone how they just refuse to give up even when the odds are against them. And even if they do fall short this year, the future for this team is looking a little brighter for we Tiger fans. So good job, Tigers. Keep going. And the future is looking a little bit better now for all of us and for the entire country now after the debate this week. But as we have seen, the polls here in Michigan are way, way, way too close, which is why there's no time for celebration. And remember, while the presidential race is so important, so is the fight for the state house this year. That's why it's important to have Democrats fighting for every single district across the state. Let's fight to not just keep the state house blue, but let's increase its numbers. So please, if you can, donate to the campaign of those brave and strong progressive Democrats running for state house seats. They desperately need every penny you can give. Until next week, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.